Tomorrow, before the tribunal of mumblers, I shall make no attempt to defend myself. That doesn't mean to say I'll stay silent. Never that. I'll do what I was born to do, attack. If the verdict of that bunch of rotting fishheads goes against me, I die like friend Mara, though struck down by a better hand. My own. It's been a rich confession after all, friends, deserving of some penance, at least 5 Hail Marys and 26 Amens. After all, I've preached revolution and sedition, slaughtered a king and others, lived in sin, and will probably end even deeper in it by killing myself. In the eyes of the church, it is a 100% record of failure. But on Judgment Day, I expect to stand before my God justified. I do not condemn myself and shall not be condemned. So, amen. If it's to be the last amen, I go gladly. My wife and son will weep, I know. And George here will howl a little, won't you, boy? My friends will pause, shake their heads, and move on. For they have the difficult part. Living well is so much harder than dying well. I have tried to help create a people who are skeptical, rational, critical, not easily fooled or impressed, in a word, a free people, ungovernable. It's a dream, of course, but I've been lucky to have lived through times that made the dream seem possible, when just for a moment we stopped being me and mine, you and yours, us and them, and saw ourselves instead as equals in our common humanity. We are of that generation that so transformed the world that future days and nights can never be the same. We poor, clumsy men and women turned the world upside down, inside out, round and about. One last word from my last sermon. The revolution isn't complete, hardly begun. Defend it. Don't sit back. Act. Without action, no life. Without life, no perfection. Without perfection, no eternal peace and freedom. For God is an active power. And we do his work in fighting the great battles. Light against darkness. Love against selfishness. Revolution against reaction. Life against death. Come on, Joe. Time for our walk.
notre forge, battons le fer quand il est chaud. C'est la lutte finale, trompons-nous et demain, l'internationale sera le genre humain. C'est la lutte finale, trompons-nous.
Back in the USSR, we'll be back after this short break.
Yo, we sitting up in the studio
listening to some tunes at CFRU 93.3
FM.
Did you know Guelph has a winter music festival? Hillside Inside is a fiery festival in downtown Guelph taking place from January 29th to the 31st. Hillside Inside celebrates music with Baja Bulat, the Elwins, the Strumbellas, the avant-garde Daka Braka, Jeff Berner, plus a whole host of other shows including film, gospel, bluegrass, literature, and contemporary dance. Tickets are on sale at The Bookshelf, 41 Quebec Street in downtown Guelph, a physically accessible location, and on ticketbreak.com.
Tune in to Planet Groove for Funky Fridays on CFRU from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. with your Funky Funky Blues Doctor for a stir-fry of funk, rock, blues, metal, and more. That's 10 a.m. every Friday on CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph.
Hi, I'm Handel, and I volunteer at CFRU because I love working with the people here, and I also love the feeling of contributing something meaningful to the world.
CFRU is always looking for new volunteers. No experience is necessary, and all the training is free. If you would like to get involved, email volunteer@cfru.ca.
Hi, my name is Jeff, and I love CFRU because it introduces me to all kinds of music I would otherwise not have heard. And there's a vending machine down the hall.
Okay, you're listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. Now, so that was Alan Rickman with, well, we had the Internationale in French, the original version of the Internationale, iconic internationalist song, Socialism, right there. But at the same time, you know, we had, you know, before then, we had Alan Rickman's performance, you know, which deserves to be heard more widely, of The Preacher, you know, his portrayal of Jacques Roux, revolutionary, one of the most radical figures of the French Revolution, portraying him in Peter Barnes' monologue in 1989 on BBC television, of all places. So it's quite impressive stuff, you know, and like I said before, it's much more... Like, I wish Alan Rickman was remembered more for his political activism, particularly with regard to Palestine and the BDS movement, than with regard to his involvement in the Harry Potter movies, you know, which, of course, is what most people are going to know him for, you know. So I'm going to change gears a little bit right now. I'm going to go over to segment on the Real News Network of this past week, an interview that was done about another monologue, you could say, another one-person play being performed and making the rounds right now in the United States to critical acclaim, you know, where it gets played, where it gets a chance to actually play. And the monologue is called Stokely in Power. It's about Stokely Carmichael, a very radical black power activist in the 1960s in the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. And, you know, easily one of the leading figures amongst the African-American youth at that time, one of the most inspiring figures at that time, of people fighting for self-determination for African-Americans in the United States. Once again, fighting against another apartheid society, you know. And this is particularly timing. I mean, here at the University of Guelph, we have a teach-in, a Black Liberation teach-in that will be going on at the University of Guelph here at the University of Guelph campus on Monday, on January 18th. And there's a whole, like, campaign that's kicking off around that, and, you know, which the Young Communist League in Guelph is taking part in and supporting. And recently, I know a comrade who is a person of color in Ottawa was actually a victim of police violence. This was a person who, was in the Young Communist League in Ottawa. And she was basically, you know, arrested, beaten up by the cops, and they took her laptop. They took her things. They're making her pay to get her laptop back. She's going through all kinds of legal proceedings right now, and there's a whole campaign which is being organized on Indiegogo by my comrade Jenna Amaro from the Ottawa Young Communist League around this. If I actually had the address for that, I would definitely put that out there, but I can definitely post that one online. Seeing I usually post this episode of Back in the USSR online, I will definitely be spreading that one widely, because, I mean, we're looking at least $5,000, you know, to really support this person in this process of legal fees and, you know, all this kind of nonsense that she's going through right now, after she's been abused by the police. You know, so I mean, this kind of stuff happens in Canada. It's not just confined to the United States. This is happening, people who are non-white basically have to deal with this all the time, especially in like settler colonial societies like this in Canada, and like particularly, you know, with their indigenous people or black people or, you know, Hispanic people or what have you. You know, they're going to be the targets of the cops, you know, and the various enforcement mechanisms of the capitalist state are going to target them. Because once again, racism is a structural component of the society, and that is something that Stokely Carmichael certainly understood, and that's certainly the actor who played him in this particular monologue, Stokely in Power. He certainly understands that too, and that comes out in this interview, which is very, very good. It's on the Real, you know, from the Real News Network. I'm going to play that now, so please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
Hello, I'm Lawrence Brown for the Real News Network in Baltimore. Today I'm here with playwright and actor Michonne LeBron. Michonne LeBron received international recognition for his critically acclaimed one-man show, Right to Remain, Tupac Shakur. His latest play, Power, debuted this year, and in it he takes his audience on a mesmerizing journey of the powerful and iconic organizer Stokely Carmichael. Carmichael was a part of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee and coined the iconic phrase, Black Power. Michonne, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. Thank you very much.
You know, your play is just riveting, very powerful, your portrayal of Stokely Carmichael. And I wonder, what led you to create, craft, and write this production about Stokely Carmichael?
Well, it was a few years ago, around the time of the Trayvon Martin incident, which really struck me to the core, because that young man actually, from what I understand, he grew up in a part of Miami in which I grew up, Miami Gardens and Opa-locka area. And after seeing what took place with that, with the whole trial, and it just, it struck me to the core, because it told me that, wow, you know, even in the 21st century, my opinion is that the black male life really does not matter, and that we haven't really gone or come as far as we have thought we have. To me, it was just another modern lynching in which, you know, you go to trial and the victim is actually on trial and not the one who actually fired the shot. It brought up images of Emmett Till. And when that happened, knowing that it was Emmett's death that propelled us into the civil rights movement, I began to think about those that were a part of that movement, such as, of course, Dr. King, Fannie Lou Hamer, you know. And then I started thinking about SNCC. Mm. And, of course, it led me right to Stokely Carmichael. And I said, I think that we are in a need for a resurrection of that spirit, and to actually bring those spirits and those beings to light and to the forefront again, because, you know, we need our ancestors, especially when we are in trouble. There's nothing wrong with calling on them. So that's the reason why I decided to go ahead and write this play.
I think it's interesting that you mentioned the word resurrection, because that's really the imprint that was on my mind when I saw the play, is like, this is a resurrection of Brother Stokely Carmichael. He's alive, right. And it's like I'm meeting him. And you mentioned that you know, we need our ancestors in these moments where we're in trouble. And you bring alive several voices in this play,
right.
Several characters, if you will. Why did you think it was important to sort of resurrect these characters in this production?
I think because we've forgotten them. Mm-hmm. They've been erased out of our minds and out of our hearts, first and foremost, as African-American people, and definitely on a wider scale as a majority, as just plain old Americans. You know, I remember growing up, I did not see anything about Stokely Carmichael at all in my history book. The only people that I remember seeing, of course, is Dr. King and Rosa Parks. It wasn't until much later on that you started hearing about Malcolm X, but Stokely was nowhere near there. The only reason why I was able to know these people, know our ancestors, such as Stokely, and such as the older gentleman that I play and portray in the production, who witnessed a lynching as a young boy, is because my family is from the South. And I remember listening to my grandparents on the porch at night during the summertime talking about the different people that came about to work for our freedom, that sacrificed so much. And then, of course, my own parents. My father was a part of the civil rights movement as a young man. He followed Dr. King. Mm. And there was a gentleman in Tallahassee, Florida, by the name of Reverend Steele. It was like a little subsect of the SCLC. Mm-hmm. And my father, along with other college students and high school students, went to try to integrate the movie house. And, of course, they all got put in jail and, you know, horrible conditions, and I mean, the police officers tried to hold back the crowds, but they really didn't, while they spat and hit these young children. So I remember those stories, and I put those stories and those people within this play to bring their voices back, so that we could be reminded that we didn't just get here. It just didn't pop up that we just here, we can go wherever we want and get any job that we want and ride on the bus or the train and sit wherever we want. No, there were a lot of blood that was spilled, a lot of sacrifices, you know.
You know, I think it's important that you talk about the sacrifices, and one of the sacrifices, it seems to me, is the fact that the psychology of what it meant to be enslaved, the psychology of what it meant to be alive while people were being lynched from trees, as Billie Holiday talks about Strange Fruit, you really hone in your play on psychology, on the psychology of being a victim of white supremacy. You hone in on how psychology or how white supremacy has really impacted the religion, the music, the lyrics, the prayers of black people. Why do you think it's important to make that connection between the manifestations of black culture and the plantation experience, or the impact of that plantation experience, how that impacts black culture?
As black people, I'm going to put this delicately. As black people, we have to understand that we've had to make do. You had to make do because of the condition that you were born in. You were born in a system that enslaved you. What does that mean? That means that I was born in a system where automatically, as soon as I took breath, yes, I was born, but I am not free. So I place a name on you. That is not your name. You're brought up, and the first thing that's the most important thing is that you need to know who you are and whose you are, your connection to the spirit, your connection to God. So then I get this name that's not mine. I'm introduced to a religion that is not mine. I'm introduced to the figure that I'm supposed to pray to and revere and ask for help. He looks nothing like me. Now, this is very difficult and very hard to hear, but it's the truth. I'm learning a language that's not mine. I'm dressing up in ways that's really not part of my culture. I'm learning about my culture, but it's only a culture in which I'm doing to try to survive so that, you know, I won't be taken off the map. I won't be murdered. I won't be killed. So I have to make do, just like any prisoner in a prison. You know, yeah, this is my home. I'm going to my house. He's talking about his cell. It's not your house. That's a box that you're living in because you're being punished for something you did. We're being punished, but we don't know what the hell we did. But then the religion that we're taught to revere and to practice told us, yes, you did something. Your black skin is your curse, and you're from Ham. And says it's your natural right to be a slave, to be a nothing, to be even less than a horse, or thought of as less than a horse or a pig. They put insurance policies on us, just like you did a car. So you know, this culture that we have is not really a culture that it's really us and ours. It's something in which we had to take upon us to make do. James Baldwin talks about how he said, you know, the white man invented the nigger. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that is. You know, he says, you know, I'm paraphrasing. I don't know what that is. That's something that he's afraid of. But, you know, he's breaking those chains, the psychological chains that are on us. And we still have them on us today. It's very difficult, but one of the ways that you can really break those chains, you really have to confront the truths. And the culture that we have now is a culture that came about because of the condition that we're born in. It's gotten so bad now that even with the form of art, hip-hop, which we would learn about each other and learn about who we were and learn that we weren't slaves, learn that we weren't colored folks and Negroes and coons, that we were actually from a place that was rich with minerals and knowledge and everything, now has become a culture from not knowledge, but ignorance. Now we glorify the gun. Now we glorify killing each other. And that is black culture. Mm. That is black culture. So you haven't really come too far from being a nothing less than an animal, a slave, or a quote-unquote nigger. Mm-hmm. You come full circle. You go from that back to nigger or nigger, mm-hmm. you know.
So you're saying the plantation experience is still with us
in some ways. The plantation is still with us until we decide to confront those things that made us slaves. Mm. Because the only place a slave can be is on a plantation. Mm. A slave can't be a free man walking around free. He can't be in heaven on earth unless he's cleaning the toilets. I mean, you understand what I'm saying? So, you know, and in heaven, you're not going to have that. It's just everybody's free. Right. You know what I mean? Right. You know, you're praising the Lord all day. You know what I mean? You know, but the plantation mentality and culture is still with us. We refuse to ask the hard questions, look them dead in the face, and break those chains. In my opinion, we need to break the chains of the names that we carry. It's hard. I'm going through that right now. Okay? I'm going through that right now. That's hard because you're brought up with a name. You take pride in your name. Your family is all connected to it. I know that's my cousin. I know that's my father. I know that's my brother. I know that's my sister because of these names. But then when we look closely at that name, that's nothing more than a name of a person that purchased us. You have the only connection you have with that person is through a bill of sale and not blood.
So, Stokely Carmichael, born in Trinidad, moved to the United States when he was 11, attended Howard University, and I believe he was a psychology major or...
Philosophy,
yes, philosophy major. And so, do you think that philosophy, but also he was a brilliant, bright, talented student in New York before he went to Howard... Do you think that his study of philosophy allowed him to sort of delve into these issues in a very powerful way? Or was it, you know, something else at Howard maybe that clued him into this?
No, he was a philosophy major. He loved Albert Camus. And one of the images that I always kept in mind when writing this play, I always like to look at certain things. I'll look at pictures or I'll read poetry that will actually inspire me when I write these plays. And the image that I kept seeing in my head was Sisyphus, the myth of Sisyphus, and him being cursed, rolling this boulder up a hill. He's working. Roll it to the top of the hill, just to watch it roll back down. And him having to walk all the way back down and begin rolling. And I said, oh my God, that's black people. Sisyphus is black people trying to roll this boulder of justice, freedom, and equality just to watch it roll back down once you get it up to the top. You know, you had to march on Washington in 63, and oh man, you're getting all these things signed, and Dr. King is with us, and we're making some strides, and then he's killed, and it rolls back down. Mm. You know, and then you try to pick it up again, you know, because now black power is really on the move, and, you know, we're really gonna get our independence and everything, and then we get shot with Novocaine that makes us numb to what's happening, and then they give us quote-unquote government jobs, and then the movement stops. We think we've arrived. No, we haven't arrived. There's still a lot of work that needs to be done. So I always kept that in mind. I said, I would ask myself, I wonder, is Stokely at that time, is he seeing that? Since he was a lover of Albert Camus, is he seeing that? Does he see that we're rolling this boulder up the hill, but will we get the result that we're truly looking for? And that's why I put that little section at the end in the play, if you remember.
Right. It's, I mean, because what's interesting, if you read Stokely's speeches, he's like a surgeon trying to perform psychological surgery on black people. I mean, Malcolm used to do that in a lot of his speeches. And, you know, Malcolm would say things like, you know, who gave you your name? You know, who taught you? You know, who taught you to hate yourself?
Absolutely.
And so Stokely sort of picks up that mantle of saying, you know, asking black people to really understand who they were. I mean, he's down in the Deep South working with sharecroppers.
Yes.
You know, in 1966, almost 50 years ago, coming up in 2016, the March Against Fear.
Right.
You know, they're marching down to Jackson, finishing up the march that James Meredith started.
Right.
You know, what do you think about the fact that we are nearly 50 years out from the March Against Fear, where Black Power, the phrase, was born? Was that something you, in your creation of this play, consciously thought about? Or do you think, you know, as we're moving into this 50th anniversary of Black Power, that maybe it was just time that something like this came forward?
I think timing is everything. And I think when you have, or when you're in tune with what's going on in the world, you'll find yourself right on time. You know what I mean? But you have to be conscious and aware of your surroundings, and you have to listen to the call when it's time to act on certain things. And I believe it's just coincidence that I was able to get the play off the ground at the time. You know what I mean? This past summer. But that call for Black Power here 50 years later is still so needed, you know? And it, you know, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier. You know, it comes to the point where, you know, we as black people, we need to come to grips with being united. And we still haven't really truly embraced that, to unite with each other. I think it's completely ridiculous that I'm still seeing black churches fighting with one another over doctrine. I think that is the most ridiculous thing in the world. I think that it's ridiculous that I'm seeing black people fighting over, even in some cases still over skin color, about dark and light. You know, I think it's horrible to see brothers and sisters fighting amongst themselves. You know, Negroes ain't it, you know what I mean? And then, oh, these bees ain't this, you know? And it's your fault. No, it's your fault. And it's your fault. And, you know, we're not able to really come together. We have all these divisions within us. Black Power talked about that. Black Power talked about how we must be united. First and foremost, we must be united. And then not only be united, but then embrace who we are, embrace the true culture of black people, or as Stokely Kwame Ture later on would say, as African people. You know, we're African people. You know, don't let them fool you with that whole African American. No, you're African people. Because like Malcolm said, if you are American, the problems that's facing our people would not even exist.
What do you think the relevance of Black Power is to Black Lives Matter?
Black lives will not really matter until it first matters to black people. As these race soldiers, I can't call them police officers, that go around shooting black people. And that's horrible, you know. I mean, I remember the Rodney King incident like it was yesterday, and I was livid. And then growing up in Miami, the police officers there were by far probably some of the worst individuals you'll ever want to find, like, really. And I always tell people to, you know, check out different documentaries, Cocaine Cowboys and all that stuff like that, where you can see all the corruption, how these guys would literally just kill people and work with drug cartels and all that kind of stuff like that. But it's very horrible in Miami, as well as L.A. and New York, and we're seeing now in Chicago what took place. But Black Lives Matter, you know, and I applaud these young people for what they're doing, you know. So somebody got to do it, right? You know, I applaud them. But for my people, Black lives won't really matter until it matters to us. And Black lives don't matter in a system of white supremacy. All lives do matter, except for Black lives. Again, this is very difficult to hear, but it's true. It's true. If it wasn't true, we wouldn't be seeing the turmoil that's taking place in the country right now. We wouldn't see it. It wouldn't exist. People are like, what are you talking about, Black lives? Of course, Black lives. But what? They wouldn't even understand the question of, do black lives matter? People would look at you like, what are you talking about? And so now we're having to say, Black lives matter. Really? Black power, to me, I think, is the key phrase that should be used, because it takes power. That's my responsibility, and it holds me accountable. You know, I think Stokely said, and I'm paraphrasing, if a man tries to lynch me, you know, I believe he said that's my problem. You know, and I'm going to handle that problem. I'm going to handle it. Mm-hmm. Nonviolence, I've never agreed with that. Mm-hmm. Ever. Never. And me and my father would talk about it. I'm not letting you do that to me. No, 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 no. If I'm going to go in there and I'm going to get a cup of coffee, I'll get the cup of coffee. If you don't want to serve me the cup of coffee, okay. Well, then I'll go ahead and set up my own shop to buy my cup of coffee, you know. If I'm going to ride on these streets, you saying I can't really walk on these streets or ride over here on these streets, and you taking my taxes, well, then I'm going to just find a way where I don't have to pay taxes. You know, and then if you come at me talking about some Negro, you won't pay taxes, and you try to step your foot on my porch, I'm blowing your whole leg off. Yeah, I mean, this is very practical things here we're talking about.
Self-defense.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. How can we sit up here and, you know, we talk about these murderers out here in Paris, whatnot. I have not heard anybody yet say, let's forgive them. I haven't heard that yet. Mm. I haven't heard anybody say, forgive those people. Let's reason with them. No, they blowing up anybody that's associated with them. People that's not even associated with them. Mm-hmm. You know, and you got this Trump man. Talking about anybody that's a Muslim, he not letting them in, and all this kind of, and people are cheering that. Now you may have some folks say, "Oh yeah, that's wrong," but secretly they're like, "Yeah, you know, I think that's right." You know what I mean? So I mean, I'm saying all that to say, you know, we need to be aware of where we are. We be careful with some of the things that we're saying. Black Lives Matter. I mean, again, I applaud it, I respect the movement. Anything that any of my brothers and sisters are trying to do, I respect it. But I'm a bit of a realist, and I know where I am, and I know what kind of country I'm living in, and I know its history, and it's a very painful history. And I'm not going to walk through life with rose-colored glasses on, acting as if what I'm seeing is not real, and what I'm hearing is not real, and what I'm experiencing is not real. No. I'm going to take it upon myself to do what I can to take care of myself, my family, you know, my friends, and I'm going to align myself with anybody that's willing to stand up for freedom, justice, and equality.
Where do you go in 2016? What's on your calendar? What's coming up?
Well, what we're planning on doing is someone requested Right to Remain again. And so we have a performance that's taking place in Tennessee. But our focus for 2016 is to take Power Stokely Carmichael to as many colleges as possible. We were seeking to take it to about 10 colleges, universities, and to other theaters. We have a theater down in Miami that wants us, and right now we're just waiting on a few universities and colleges. And one of them in particular is Howard, you know, and Morgan State. So we're anticipating them giving us a call and setting it up. And it would just be wonderful. It would be wonderful to take it to Howard and, you know, the place where the man graduated and where he, you know, came to the realization that he needed to be a part of the movement.
Exactly, where he became a SNCC activist.
Absolutely.
One last question. In the course of playing, portraying Tupac Shakur, Stokely Carmichael, is there any residue? Do these characters stay with you? Do they bleed over into real life in any way?
They do, because these characters, they are part of me. You know, each one of these characters, whether it's Tupac Shakur, whether it's Stokely Carmichael, they come out of me, out of my spirit. You know, it was something about Tupac that just spoke volumes to me as I was growing up and listening to him, and particularly listening to his interviews and just his thoughts on things. And I was like, wow, that's me. You know what I mean? That young man is me. And so when I decided to write that, I literally wrote that script in about a week. Right to Remain, Tupac Shakur. Stokely Carmichael, it took me a little longer because I wanted to really do my research on him. And once I got that, it took me literally about three weeks to write that. And a friend of mine actually had called me one day. He was like, you know who you remind me of? I was like, what? He's like, I'm watching YouTube here, and I'm watching these old clips of Stokely Carmichael. He's like, you look like that guy. He's like, you even sound like that guy. I was like, really? I was like, oh, okay. You know, he was like, man, my little daughter, his daughter's like 6 years old. He said, Eli, who is that? You know, she looked at it, she's like, oh, that's Michonne. She's like, she thought that was you out there. I was like, wow. So he said, you know, you need to look into that. You know, and then, again, that was around the time with the incident with Zimmerman and Trayvon. And he knew I wanted to express myself. And that's when I took a look at Brother Stokely. I was like, yeah, that's what I want to do. I want to bring that voice back. I want to bring Black Power back. Black Power 2.0. The 50th anniversary of Black Power for 2016, Black Power 2.0. And as a matter of fact, when I take the show to these different colleges, I'm also adding that lecture workshop called Black Power 2.0, What Must Be Done.
Michonne, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Really appreciate it.
Once again, I'm Lawrence Brown with the Real News Network in Baltimore, Maryland. Thank you for joining us for this interview.
They claim we're brothers from the bottom of hell, 'cause the black is back and it's bound to sell. Picture us cooling out on the 4th of July. And if you heard me, we're celebrating, that's a worldwide lie. Yo, Chuck, the Fed Data Rules, man, trying to pull a 226 on your G. Yo, man, show 'em what you got. Show 'em what you got.
This style seems wild. Wait before you treat me like a stepchild. Let me tell you why they got me on file. 'Cause I give you what you lack. Come right in, exec. I status is the status, so I care where you're at. Black, in that home, I got a call from Tony Rome. The FBI was tapping my telephone. I never live alone, I never walk alone. My posse's always ready and they waiting in my zone. Although I live the life that of a resident, but I've been knowing the scheme that of a president. Tapping my phone, whose crew's abused? I stand accused of doing harm, 'cause I'm louder than a bomb. Troopers always ready. I yell Geronimo, your CIA, your CIA kin. Both King and X, they got rid of both. A story untold, true but unknown. Professor Griff knows.
Yo, I ain't I'm bragging, I'm boasting, and plus it ain't no secret why they tapping my phone, although I can't keep it a secret, so I decided to kick it, yo. And yes, it weighs a ton, I say it once again, I call the enemy, I'll never be a friend of those with closed minds, and know that I'm rapping, the way that I rap it is making them tapping, yeah, never serving them well, cause I'm an untime, it's no secret at all, cause I'm louder than a bomb. Taking my code in my bucket, cause they're bugging my phone for information. No telling, no selling, that power building the nation. So, joining the set, stop, point blank, target every brother's inside. So, least not you forget, no. Taking a blame is not a waste. Here's taste, a bit of a sauce, so you can never be wrong. Just a bit of advice, so we be paying a price. Cause every brother man's life is like swinging a dice, right? Here it is, once again, this is the brother, the terminator, the color. Going on, leave alone the groan. Get it straight in 88. Demonstrate the posse always ready, 98 and 98. My posse come quick because my posse got velocity. Tapping my phone, never leave me alone. I'm even lethal when I'm unarmed, cause I'm louder than a bomb.
Jump you out.
You can come and get some of this. I teach and speak, so it is focused. No joke, no voice of choice. The place shakes with bass. Go one for the treble. The rhythm is the rebel. Here's a funky rhyme that they're tapping on. Just thinking I'm breaking the beats I'm rapping on. CIA, FBI, all they tell us is lies. When I say it, they get alarmed. Cause I'm louder than a bomb. Bomb.
Back in the USSR, we'll be back after this short break.
You're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM, your source of alternative media in Guelph.
The Off the Floor Fest 2016 show series is happening in downtown Guelph Friday, January 22nd, January 29th, and February 5th. On Friday, January 22nd, Jimmy Jazz will host a free opening night show.
Are you drawn to aggressive sounds? Are you subject to violent outbursts of rage? Do you have sudden urges to destroy everything in sight? If so, we have just the thing for you.
Forever Death!
Forever Death on 93.3 CFRU, Thursday nights at 10 after 10 following the BBC.
The Guelph Food Bank is looking for volunteers to help out throughout the year with various events and food drives. As a volunteer, you can help out with the warehouse, stuff a vehicle events, Christmas gift wrapping at the mall, and much, much more. The Guelph Food Bank is located at 100 Crimea Street in Guelph, a physically accessible location. For more information, contact Tracy at 519-767-1380.
Listen to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. That was Eric Voice, Canadian Aboriginal artist with Louis Riel. And I think that just goes to show, I mean, we've talked a bit about like Palestine, went back to the French Revolution. We went, to African-American resistance, both in the 1960s and right now, and like the ongoing tradition of that resistance. And, that, of course, was, and this song by Eric Voice, I mean, that was about Louis Riel and the, indigenous resistance in this country, in Canada. And it's important to remember, like, now that we've come down to the end of the show, I think it's important to remember that everywhere you go in the world, there is traditions of resistance to oppression and exploitation. You know, in the structures of exploitation in society, there's resistance everywhere to that. And, you know, they take different form depending on what the actual conditions in those societies are. But, I mean, they're everywhere you look. That tradition is always there. You know, whether you want to talk about, in North America or in Europe or in South America or in Africa or Asia, like or Australia, all these places have their own traditions of resistance. And that's very important to keep in mind. And, you know, really that's what communism really tries to do, is like really unite a lot of these traditions of resistance, you know, and direct them against the ultimate oppressor, which is the capitalist system. You know, which is worldwide. And really, resistance needs to be international. It needs to be worldwide. It needs to be united against the common enemy. And really, that's what communism strives to do. You know, it's to unite working class struggles worldwide, unite oppressed peoples worldwide, and really build this united front to destroy the structures of imperialism, capitalism, you know, the forces that are oppressing people and destroying lives and exploiting people all over the world. You know, that's really what communism strives to do. It tries to, like, destroy those, strives to unify people to effectively fight back, you know, and to win, and to, you know, to achieve victory and to achieve control, self-determination, control over their own lives, their own destinies. You know, and this is the victory that socialism has historically been about. You know, like, this is what it strives to build, the kind of socialist society it strives to build. So I'm going to end the show with a song which really captures that. This was by a Soviet composer, Serafim Tulikov, and this is called Lenin Is Always With You. And it really shows that, you know, the revolutionary tradition is worldwide, and it is always with anyone who fights back against the system that oppresses them. You know, the systems of exploitation in this world, anyone who fights against capitalism, you know, ultimately they're in the same fight. And that needs to be kept in mind. And Lenin, of course, being the leader of the first socialist revolution, successful socialist revolution in history, you know, he still is a very great symbol of what can be achieved.
За днём идут года, зори новых поколений.
советской власти. Он сказал, что на земле